It's official. We're doing episode 23 from someplace new.
Welcome to From Someplace New, the long-term travel podcast where Karen Bernhardt and John Sumple discuss their hows and whys, lows and highs, and lessons learned while living abroad.
Welcome to Scotland.
Scotland.
And to episode 23 of From Someplace New, I'm John Sumple.
And I'm Karen Bernhardt.
And this is our long-term travel podcast that is actually moving again. So we're very excited.
We're following our namesake. Finally.
Finally, from someplace new, we are actually someplace new.
And it's super, super exciting, you guys. And we're going to share our journey with you. I hope you're interested because we're going to walk you through, drive you through, fly you through our journey to get from Bariloche, Argentina to Edinburgh, Scotland.
And it was quite the journey, too. Part of what we want to share is not only the journey, but what we kind of learned throughout the process.
Lots of lessons learned.
Lots of lessons learned. And
because these are very unique times, as I'm sure you right. all realize, in the world in general and certainly for travel. So there will be discussion around how this all worked.
Yeah, there was a big unknown going into it, but we survived. We'll tell you all about
it. Well, not only survived, we thrived.
So what's the best thing that happened to you last week? I think I know.
This might be a shocker to you, but it was that we were traveling again.
Yeah, me too. Right. Kind of a no-brainer.
Kind of obvious.
Kind of a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a travel week. You know, we left on a Monday and got here on a Thursday night. So it was a long week. So we might as well just get into it because that really is the best thing that happened to us, and it was a journey worth sharing for sure.
I think so. It was quite tremendous, and the reward is the fact that we're sitting here right now in a lovely apartment in Edinburgh, Scotland. Pinch me, I can hardly believe it's actually happened, but it has. So here we go.
Yeah, and before we are able to go out and do anything, we have to endure 2 weeks of quarantine.
Right.
So we're three days into it.
Quarantine.
Yeah. So we have 11 more days to go until we are truly exploring again.
Right. But honestly, that wasn't a deterrent for us whatsoever.
We knew it was a condition.
Because we were very much limited as to where we could go. So having some of those options be places where you would have to self-quarantine for a couple of weeks seemed like a no-brainer that, of course, we'll do that.
Yeah, and fortunately for us, we are long-term travelers. So it's not a matter of going on vacation for 2 weeks and saying, well, I can't go there because I'm going to spend my entire time in quarantine. We're going to be in this apartment for 6 weeks and most likely in the UK for months.
For a lot of people, it wouldn't work because they're looking to vacation, not to do something like what we're doing.
Right. It was a journey that started officially, you know, as far as what we had to prepare for was on Sunday. So Sunday afternoon, we had a visit from the doctor.
So I'm thinking maybe do just a really quick recap, like how we got to where we were with this kicking off officially for us on Sunday night.
Yeah, we had to do a lot of overland travel preparation, just getting
new term.
To,
I had never heard of this.
Yeah.
The concept.
Getting to Scotland was the easy part. That was a matter of booking a flight. Getting to the airport from Bariloche required more heavy lifting for us. We had to be in touch with the U.S. consulate. We had to be in touch with the Argentine government. We had to be in touch with a transport service that coordinated all the information we needed to share with those different agencies. Before we could even plan to get to the airport, we needed all of that documented.
That was certainly the most unusual and unique aspect of this, something that we had never encountered and hopefully never will have to again, but it was very specific as to what we needed to do to be able to, like you said, leave the town of Bariloche, but then officially leave the country of Argentina.
So the doctor drops by Sunday afternoon, and really all he did was take our temperature.
Yeah, you thought that was kind of a funny thing. Like, was it really necessary?
It wasn't necessary because, in hindsight, nobody ever asked for any documentation about that.
Right, but what I saw, was that something that was specified by the driving service?
They said that we would need it at the airport.
Okay. So just to have that. So we were prepared. So, that was very...
It was a just in case,
I think.
And it was only $30 total for both of us.
Which is fine. And, we weren't going to cut corners, whatsoever with this. No. We wanted everything buttoned up. But, yeah, so that was interesting. So he was able to do a house call. Originally, it was going to be Sunday night. He came over earlier Sunday, was there for all of, 7 minutes.
Right.
Took our temperatures, filled out some paper, piece of paper... stamped it, and interesting, just side note, he is a proctologist.
Yes, so we had our temperatures taken right. by a proctologist.
Just so it was still taken, it was oral.
It wasn't oral.
It wasn't even, but it wasn't.
It was the gun.
Where your mind might go. It wasn't that temperature.
It wasn't a, hunker down situation.
Yeah, so our proctologist cleared us medically, which was great.
So we could go. We were all cleared and ready to go on Sunday afternoon.
That's
we got our documentation.
Hurdle.
We were good. We had all the paperwork secured for the overland travel. The travel service had copies of everything that we had copies of.
And again, huge props to you, John, because you did so much of that coordinating and dealing with just figuring out those details and the paperwork and what we would need to do formally to make this happen. So,
and part of that, too, it's interesting you bring that up, is that because this is such an unknown entity, that the whole COVID travel, every country is going to be a little bit different, and it was changing constantly.
Oh, my goodness. You remember, too, we were so nervous that anything could change within the days. Well, first of all, there's the biggest arc is staying healthy, knowing that it would be, no go if either of us got sick. So I was super paranoid about that. But as you know, things had started to open up in the last few weeks that we were there. And, of course, we were restless. We wanted to get out and go for walks. And there were, I say a few restaurants, but we only ended up going to that
one
restaurant.
There was only one that was open, even though they said other ones were open. Right. We never saw any other ones open.
Right. So we were super cautious. I can't believe how much we, washed our hands and swabbed our hands.
It seemed like every night it was like, how do you feel? Do you feel okay?
Oh, and that
one. Scratchy throat.
Well, what was it, Tuesday night before we left on that following Monday, and you thought you had a little bit of a scratchy throat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, no, you don't. You just knocked
that off
right now.
It was not allowed. I think we talked ourselves out of any sickness.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I wanted to say about that was, because it's such an unknown, there was a lot of research that you had to do, and you had to kind of check almost daily. And we were fortunate enough to find, and I mentioned this last episode, Travel Off Path Community on Facebook. It's an absolutely fantastic Facebook page for anybody who is considering travel, especially during these times, because they provide you with regular updates. It's a woman who started this to provide information for people to travel, and this has become a go-to resource for a lot of people during these unknown times as to what's open, what isn't. And the woman who's been running it has dedicated team that has been working overtime to get this information out as it comes through the system. So we've been super appreciative, not only of the community, but and having the page in and of itself, but also for the people on there, and their level of engagement and sharing of information has been a huge, huge help.
Yeah, it's the closest you can get to real-time updates and information regarding
this. And what we would usually do is, once we saw that, we would then jump into look at what was going on within each country's immigration department to make sure that we had everything covered. So before we left, we had to get documentation from KLM for arrival in Amsterdam to say that we were healthy. It was a self-filled out form saying I'm fine. And we also had to secure paperwork for where we were staying when we got to Scotland, because they needed to know that you were going to be quarantined and have the ability to check in on you to make sure that you were staying quarantined during a 2-week period after you arrived.
So that's the travel locator form.
Right. So we had to get all this stuff taken care of even before we left. Looking back, the most challenging part of the entire journey was preparing for it.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you did all the heavy lifting with that. So, you were just so cautious to make sure you had looked at every possible angle with this, every potential piece of documentation that was needed. And, I would always rather be over-prepared than under, but we'll talk about that. We learned that some of these things really weren't.
But for the big, grand comment about the whole trip, it was super easy. We had no glitches at any point.
I just kept looking at you like, is this really coming together this easily and without incident at, I mean, not even on the tiniest blip.
No delays. So,
like somebody wanted us to be here.
Well, it was all the hard work. We got rewarded for the preparation.
I think so, yeah.
So we get up early on Monday morning. Not too early. We had packed the day before. Mm-hmm. We were ready to go.
Actually, two days before, run. We were. That's actually interesting too. We packed right Saturday.
I was packed. And ready to go in like half an
Normally
hour.
Normally, we kind of put that off. It's so easy to do now. We've done it enough times, and we know exactly how everything fits in the suitcase and what works. But I think we were a little extra eager, so we, you know, got everything packed.
So the driver and two drivers arrived a few minutes before 10. We were downstairs and in the car by and driving by 10:05. And the beginning of what we thought was going to be a 19-hour drive from Bariloche to Buenos Aires to the B&B that we're staying at outside of the airport. So the airport is nowhere near the city, in case people are wondering, oh, did you get a chance to see Buenos Aires?
Not even close.
So the first 3 hours of the drive were through the Patagonian foothills.
Gorgeous.
A little cloudy, foggy, but still.
The weather was a little funky, but the setting was incredible. And I was just so wide-eyed because we've done so little, you know, living in Bariloche. A huge treat being able to walk down to the lake and see the mountains there. But, of course, we didn't get to do anything with, you know, the full Patagonia experience. So that was kind of awesome.
For 3 hours.
Drive. Yeah.
And then from the rest of the trip, it was flat as a pancake.
Not so attractive.
It'd be like driving across Kansas for 10 hours.
It really was.
12 hours.
Yeah.
But the only complaint would be that the suspension system or the shocks were not fantastic. And the seats in the back of the car were not super plush. Not that they needed to be super plush, but every time we went over a bump, and when you're going as fast as these guys were driving, they were going probably around 75 miles an hour for most of the trip there.
Every time
they hit a bump in the road, it would be, you know, we could feel the car suspension, not hit the road, but the bottom of the capacity of the suspension. And I would feel it. I'd feel it in my butt.
Yeah, we had sore tuchuses.
Yeah, we were, you know, by the time we got there, again, long time in the car. The good news was it was only 16 and a half hours.
Shorter than anticipated.
Much shorter than anticipated. So that was nice. So that was a big bonus. We were like high-fiving. We arrived at 2:30 in the morning, left at 10, arrived at 2:30 in the morning.
So
I didn't sleep at all.
Yeah, I tried. And normally I sleep very well in a car. It's not a problem for me, but I couldn't. Probably just, you know, anxious. But yeah, so I was going to mention too that so we stopped. How many? Talk about how many times the.
There were nine checkpoints.
The border checks and then security stops.
Security stops. Every time you crossed from one province into the next, there was a security stop. Those were the hardcore stops where they asked for the paperwork. Can I see your papers?
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing.
And of course, the drivers were very prepared, very organized, had everything in a nice plastic sleeve, pulling out the papers, everything stamped, buttoned up with that.
They wanted to see our passports. They wanted to see their IDs, you know, just this process. Sometimes there were photographs taken of the car.
Yeah.
One time we had our temperatures taken. So it was very serious,
you know,
from province to province, they were taking it very seriously.
And to me, it seemed like it was dozens of times, but you corrected me that it wasn't that many. But what was the total number of times?
There were three of them that were within Bariloche alone, just getting out of Bariloche and Rio Negro. There was three stops, and that was in the first 20, 30 minutes of the drive. Then once we got outside of that, there were six more along the way.
Yeah.
The longest one was about a 15-minute wait. Most of them were about 5-10 minutes tops for them to review everything, ask questions, take photographs.
It was efficient.
Yeah, it was pretty efficient.
Every time I always felt a little bit like, ooh, like this is interesting. You know, we're doing this and this is all documented and has to be by the books for us doing what we're doing.
So in total, we stopped for the checkpoints 9 times, but to get gas and stretch our legs and, you know, grab, there was no formal food dining. It was
dining.
Bathroom. And fueling, and we stopped 4 times, I think it was, during the trip. So it was pretty quick, you know, 16 and a half hours. That's what they told us, and they were like to the minute. So we arrived at 2:30 in the morning. We're checked in and in our beds by 3. The one thing that when we got there, too, they had us booked showing on their paperwork that we would arrive at 6 a.m. We were there at 2:30. He also said, well, the room that we had you in wasn't going to be available until 10, but we can put you in a smaller room, which had 2 single beds, which was fine. And it we were like, fine. Yeah, just give us a bed. Right. We're good.
We're tired.
So we were in bed and asleep by 3, probably. I think we both got up the next morning around 9. Had breakfast and then worked.
Yeah, we both had full work days. Didn't take that time off. We knew that it would be played out like this. So
and a nice dinner that night.
Yeah, it was actually really good. Yeah. And I was able to get some wine with my pasta. It was lovely.
Yeah, it was very nice. Mm-hmm. And it was my last official Argentine steak dinner.
You had a steak. You did.
The next morning, we were up at 6 o'clock. Had a quick breakfast and packed our bags into the truck, and the driver told us it was a 7-minute ride over, and it was exactly
easy,
7 minutes.
Right there. So now
so
we're
early in the morning, you're thinking not much traffic, but we get there and there's nobody out front of the airport.
Quiet.
It's like empty. And the airport is officially closed
until
September 1st. No international or domestic travel, but there are some quote unquote scheduled flights. The day that we were there, there were 4 flights the whole day leaving. None coming in, all leaving. So this was on a Wednesday, and the next scheduled flight was the following Sunday.
Yeah.
So we get to the airport. We go inside. There's no health screening.
Nope. No temperature check.
They checked your passport and your flight paperwork and checked our baggage, and that was it. We were like, oh, that's all? We're good?
Yeah. So everything at check-in was nothing unexpected there. He reminded us that of the 14-day quarantine where we were going, which we, of course, we were very aware of. And he also reminded us that in the UK that it would be a 6-month, that you could be there for 6 months, and then did ask for our return trip. Proof of onward travel when we would be returning, which is something we are very familiar with our travels, because we're always like ongoing. We're not doing loops. But a lot of airline, it depends on the airline. It varies. So you always have to be prepared. So why don't you just real quick explain? Because I think it's interesting for people that have never been encountered this, how this works.
Yeah, if you're doing a lot of one-way travel, you know you're going somewhere, but you don't know when you're leaving. You know that you have the allotted time that's available for the tourism visa. So they're basically saying, do you have proof that you'll be leaving before the end of the visa term? They want to see that. So certain countries and certain airlines specifically will ask for that. So it might depend on the country that you're leaving from, the country that you're going to, and the airline that you're flying, whether or not they'll ask you. So there's a lot of ways that you can get around that. And the most popular way that we've used, most major airlines allow you to book a 24-hour hold on a ticket. So you just book a ticket the day that you're traveling that shows that you're leaving within the tourism visa time frame and print it out or show it on your phone, and that's enough.
It doesn't matter where, just pick a city. Yeah,
it doesn't have to be. It could be as long as it's out of the country. It could be a short hop. So those are the options.
Mm-hmm.
But
those are some of the tricks
of the proof of forward travel. They asked about it. I told them we had the paperwork, and he asked what the date was. I said it's not on my phone, but it's on my computer. I can take that out. And he goes, no, as long as you have it. And I said, yeah, I do. And we were good.
So carry on.
Go to security. 0 people in security. No wait in security.
So odd to see it that quiet.
So we just got up, showed our tickets and our passports. We went through security. The next step was to go through immigration. And we were a little bit worried. Not worried. I would say this was the one thing that we thought we might get flagged for.
Could be sticky. Right.
Yeah. And it was, we are allowed 90 days on the tourist visa in Argentina, but we had stayed for like 172 days. So that was the one area where we thought if there was going to be something, this would be it.
That's where we would
Guy didn't even, something. Didn't even question. All he
Not
did was showed
even.
Me my on my passport the date that we came in. And he said, he pointed to it and said, February 1st. And I said, yes, that was it.
Nothing else.
So normally, if you overstay your visa allotted time, you're charged a penalty.
Right, which we experienced in Peru.
In Peru. But nothing.
It wasn't a big deal. We just paid it and we moved on. But yes, we were definitely anticipating something, at least something regarding that. And it was just a non-issue. Absolutely not a problem. Again, because of COVID.
And then when we walked initially into the terminal, there was nobody. There was maybe a dozen people And so we just started walking around. We were there with plenty of time.
You know, this is a place that's normally just thriving. So probably so high energy. And it was just everything shuttered.
Very
closed.
Quiet. And it makes you realize that that's having an impact on the local economy.
Yeah, it hits you.
That people
big
aren't
time.
Working, that you're very much aware that this is, you know, we're in a major city and nothing
all
is happening
at
their international airport.
Yeah.
But as it got closer and closer to boarding, more and more people showed up. So much so that our flight, I would say, was 90% full.
That's right.
And there was no health screening there. They had announcements from KLM talking about keeping distance. You always have your masks on. That was a big part of it. Don't take your masks. You know, whenever you're interacting with a flight attendant, have your mask on.
They emphasized that. And I saw numerous times where they would go down the aisles and remind somebody as they were just sitting there, if their masks were down or off, to put them on.
If you're not eating or drinking, mask on. Mm-hmm. And they were thorough about that. Mm-hmm. Flight left 5 minutes early, arrived half hour, 20 minutes early in Amsterdam. Long flight, 13 and a half hours. But not bad.
Yeah.
I think you dozed a few times on and off.
Dozed a few times. Not, again, neither of us were sleeping much, so we'll share something new that we did regarding that, getting no sleep. But interesting, you binge-watched an entire season of Watchmen.
Watchmen. Watched the entire series of Watchmen, which was outstanding.
They had some good options. For some reason, when I'm on long flights, I'm not a big movie watcher, or I can sit there for hours and just kind of like daydream and be okay with that. I know other people have to be like locked into something entertaining them. But yeah, I ended up watching, Judy, about Judy Garland.
We also
with
watched
Renee Zellweger,
YouTube,
amazing.
A U2 concert video.
Yeah, we did watch that together, which was kind of fun. But yeah.
So about an hour and a half into the flight, they served a nice warm meal.
Mm-hmm, which was nice.
It was good, you know.
It was pleasant.
Airplane fare. And then they showed on this tracker on the screen in front of your seat that they would be having service at these different points. So there was supposed to be this drink service and then a snack service and then a meal service
like
towards the end of the flight just before. So it showed you this timeline as to when it was going to be happening. But I noticed that we would go past those and nothing was happening.
And John was getting concerned because he wanted his snacks.
We had some snacks. It wasn't so much about that, but I was like, I assumed that that was for the situation.
Right. But then.
But about three hours after the hot meal, they come with a cart and they give you, I'm not kidding, it was like a grocery store bag filled with food for each person.
Like a gallon bag, like those big Ziploc gallon bags.
Yeah, and it had three cups of water, a can of soda, an apple, an orange, mm-hmm. a sandwich, a mm-hmm. bag of chips, mm-hmm. a candy bar, cookies.
A brownie.
A brownie.
Did you say cheese and crackers?
And cheese and crackers.
Yeah.
For each person.
We were laughing so hard. I've never seen anything like it. It was crazy.
But they gave it to us, you know, like 3.5-4 hours into a 13 and a half hour flight.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, here you go. This should tide you.
It seemed like a lot of food, but we both finished everything by the time we landed.
Unapologetically, we ate every last item in those bags.
Yeah, because when you're sitting there, you watch movies. Yeah. You eat, you know, you do your thing.
Oh, wait, no, and there were nuts. There were nuts, like cashews or something.
Oh, yeah, there was peanuts.
I just want to be, you know.
Yeah, thorough. Make sure we covered everything.
All the items that were in there.
It was quite large. Mm-hmm. We were laughing.
It was hysterical.
Because as they were passing them out, they were
like
huge
it.
Bags.
Yeah.
I mean.
You could tell everybody was kind of like, whoa, like, what is this? What's happening here? And then
it was pretty funny. It was like, wow, this is a lot of food. And then everybody plows through it anyway.
Right. And it's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no issues.
So just another thing related to COVID protocol. They do mention in the announcements that we don't want everybody, you know, once you land and you're cleared to move out of your seat, like, can we do it in an orderly fashion? Each row, which is kind of how it should be anyway, but each, you know, wait for each row ahead of you before you get up and you're all bustling around each other.
For the most part, everybody adhered to that.
For the most part, but you know how that goes. There's something about that. As soon as that you have that ding of that bell and you know.
No, but most people stayed seated on that flight. And when we got to Edinburgh, no, everybody got up.
Right.
There was no waiting. It just was like everybody
was
up.
Well, we're here now. Okay, so now we're in Amsterdam.
So we're it's 5:30 in the morning.
Yes. Yes.
So we arrived at 5 o'clock. We had to go through a security checkpoint. Basically, they scan your bags and stuff, your carry-on stuff. Not
just
our luggage was checked through.
What would they call it? Like a transfer,
it's a transfer point. Yeah, mm-hmm. We had to go into the transfer lounge mm-hmm. for non-Schengen countries. So we arrived from a non-Schengen country, and we're going to a non-Schengen country. So there's a terminal specifically set up for that, for international travel, and then there's one that's set up for Schengen countries. So we only had to go through a quick security checkpoint. We only had to wait 5 minutes. Just easy. For the people on the plane, yeah, relatively easy. Simple. And we were so early that we couldn't get into the lounge that we had a pass for. So we had to wait for half an hour for that to open. We were the first people in. You know, there's nobody there but us. And one other person who was behind us, but they didn't stay. I guess, I don't know why, yeah, for whatever reason, didn't stay. Mm-hmm. But she says to, and it's a huge lounge, and she says, well, you can only stay for 3 hours. We're like, there's nobody here.
Yeah, that's
and that's, you know, it does say that on the pass, yeah, that's what it's rules. For, is 3 hours before your
but
flight.
But she did say you could leave and come back.
She did.
So
she did. But at first it was kind of like, you do realize there's nobody here.
Right.
So and we stayed there for 3 hours, and we were kind of like, well, let's go out and see what, you know, what else is around,
just,
what's going on.
I don't
on.
Know if we mentioned this. We knew we would be there for 13 hours.
Yeah, 13 hours.
Arrived
at
Amsterdam
connection. 5, and our next flight was at 5:45 local time.
5:45, yep.
So, yeah, long, long time. So we got up, started walking around, did a little shopping, found out where our gate was for later, much, much later on. We went and grabbed something at Starbucks and worked for a while, mm-hmm. for a couple hours. By then it was around noon, and I was starting to hit a wall.
Me too.
And they did have one of those micro hotels
right,
inside.
Right, which we had heard about.
We checked it out
anticipated.
Before.
Right.
We're like, yeah, well, we'll check it out. Maybe if we're tired, maybe we should look into that. Mm-hmm. By noon, both of us were like,
it's happening.
Let's look into this because yeah. I could really use some sleep.
Well,
before.
And part of it, again, with all this is like you don't want to compromise your immune system. So we right. just realized, you know, all the potential exposure. Hopefully everyone was being safe. But also let's not get ourselves exhausted and, you know, come into Scotland with no sleep and then potentially getting sick because right. of it. Not even if it's COVID, but just getting sick like you can when you travel. So, yeah, sleep is important.
So we paid a premium. It was around $100 US dollars for us to spend 4 hours.
It was so
but
worth,
it, was worth it.
It.
It was worth it. I mean,
such
I was
a
asleep
cool
within, I think, 5 minutes of laying in the bed.
It was a whole little suite.
Yeah, it was surprised how big it was. Like the bed is halfway up a wall,
it's
and you
like
push
a
button and
like
it comes out.
Yeah.
So you have very little space on either side of the bed, enough to kind of get on the side of the bed and get in. But there's enough at the room at the foot of the bed. There's a coat hanger. There's space to enough room for your to put your luggage. And then there's a bathroom.
Right.
With a shower.
Right.
We didn't use the shower, but it's there for
even
you if you...
Being able to brush your teeth. Like, brush yeah. your teeth, you know, rinse your face
wash
a little
up.
Bit. And then we both... I slept harder and longer than you did.
Yeah,
I think
for
I slept
3 hours
for 3 hours
and you slept
for... Maybe 3.5 hours of the four.
You were a little bit... 3:45 is when you woke up.
Okay, so,
so
yeah.
You were good three hours and 45
At first,
minutes.
I wasn't dozing off, and I was like, oh... Do not do this to me. Like, I, please, body, let me just go to sleep because this is the opportunity right now. And then sure yeah. enough, I just.
And it was worth
gone.
It because we were refreshed.
Ugh, made
then
such
we
a
had
difference.
Only an hour, a little over an hour before our flight started boarding. Worked out perfect. We were a 5 minute walk to our gate. And we just had to wait to board our flight. 2 hours later, less than 2 hours and a half later, we were in Scotland.
Which felt like. So quick.
So then we get off the plane, walk into the customs area, very short lines there. We had maybe a 5-10 minute wait tops. We get to the person in line, asks why we're here, kind of explain where we came from, what we're doing, how long we're going to be here, where we're staying. He asked to look at the form that we had to fill out, showed it to him on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're good.
That's it. Nothing. Good. No hesitation.
Yeah, boom. Easy. So I guess the big thing with all of this is that we were more than prepared with all the paperwork.
Hyper-prepared. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we never needed to use the health screening
never
materials
touched.
That we had. Mm-hmm. We never needed to use the KLM documents when we arrived in Amsterdam. Never were asked for those.
No.
And we had just a brief conversation with the immigration person in Edinburgh, and we were through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. We kind of like looked at each other once we got through that and said, we have just traveled for 3.5 days and we have not had one single glitch, inconvenience at all. No. Zero.
It was shockingly effortless.
Yeah. And I don't want to say that we were lucky. I think that we were prepared for anything, which kind of put our we figured there would be processing issues. We figured there would be screenings that we would have to wait in lines for. We anticipated, you know, who knows, there could be a delay. You know, there was nothing. I think part of the reason why there was no delays, especially out of Buenos Aires, is because there was no flights.
Yeah, there's no traffic, so no. There's that.
So the plane was there when we got there, so mm-hmm. We were there, you know, 3 hours before departure, and the plane was there, so we knew it was there. But we stayed. One of the cool things about the plane that I would say is that this is the first time I flew on a Dreamliner, one of the Boeing Dreamliners, and one of the cool features for someone who is as tall as I am is how big the windows were. Most of the time on airplanes, in order for me to look out the window, I have to like lean forward and bend my head down to see out the window. Mm-hmm. I could just turn my head. The windows were really big. And the other thing that was cool about it is it didn't have shades.
I was going to say
it just had this button that you push that would darken the window. Mm-hmm. So you could darken it or lighten it. And I was like, that was really cool. That was a cool feature.
Did you like that more than the feed sack? The snack sack?
I just thought it was really, the best part was that the window was big and you could look out the window.
Yeah,
it was nice. It was really nice. Mm-hmm. So then we called an Uber and super nice
even
driver.
Even then it was like awesome.
Yeah. I told him like, oh, well, we can get off here is fine. We'll walk because it's just around the corner. He's like, no. I will drop you off in front of your place to the door. And then, you know, the big bonus is that when we, you know, finally get inside and get upstairs is the unit that we're staying in is probably the nicest place we've stayed at.
You guys, it's fantastic. It is so pretty. It's charming. Wooden floors, architectural details. There's space for days.
Yeah. We'll take some photos and post them on Facebook and Instagram. So follow along.
For me, being aesthetically driven the way I am, this is such a treat. But yet, I do miss South America.
I mean, there was an emotional component there. I had a run to the store the morning before we left, and during that walk, kind of seeing the mountains and everything, I realized it's like, oh, we're not going to be here again.
Yeah.
But I would go back to Patagonia because we have some unfinished business there. So, yeah, there was a little bit of like, yeah, we've spent the last 2 years in Mexico and South America.
It has been the backdrop of our lives, and it has been such an amazing experience in a gazillion different ways. And I just was feeling it. So much the fact that we're truly wrapping up our time here, you know, something that was so distinctive, and I can't say enough. It's just awesome all the things we experienced in South America.
We're now looking forward to getting through our quarantine and exploring Scotland, the Highlands.
Babes, we're in Scotland.
We're
in Europe right now.
A week ago today, right about now, we were getting our doctor checkup.
Mm-hmm. The proctologist had stopped by.
Right.
Yeah, the good doctor.
So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give it a thumbs up, leave a review, share it with your family and friends. We enjoy sharing our stories and inspiring other people to get out there and travel. So are you looking forward to someplace new in Scotland?
I am so psyched. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous?
It's ridiculous. It's awesome.